Blog Talk Radio.
Give me fuel, give me fire, give me that which I desire.
Big Memorial Day weekend.
Scratcher from the Virginia Lottery. Available in different prices and varieties at a lot.
Whoopsie. Anyway. Memorial Day weekend. weekend is over. Tribute to our fallen heroes. And a massive weekend of racing. 106th running of the Indy 500. 106th running. It's just imagine the cars they used back in the day when the brickyard was actually all bricks. All that's left of the bricks is 3 feet from infield wall to outside wall at the start-finish line. Then following that, the second half of, well, a little more than half, but I call it the second half of the Memorial Day 1100. Now, we had no dual runners because it hasn't been done in a while. First one to ever do that was actually Johnny Andretti. Then Robbie Gordon did it, and I forget who else did it. Oh, Kurt Busch did it. Imagine doing that and winning that on the same day, both of them. And you figure on the 600, you have to start from the back because you missed the driver's meeting. But now that people have done it, and it finished top 10 in both events on the same day, but never won both, which should be a little feat to behold, but somebody's going to do it someday. But anyway, as far as the 106th running of the Indy 500, came down to final lap drive off between Marcus Ericsson and Pato O'Ward. Ericsson took the checkered flag. Another win for Chip Ganassi. The favorite pole sitter was Scotty Dixon, and he didn't have as good a day. Oh, he did for a while, then he had issues, gotten involved in the a mess. But you know, somebody running Rookie of the Year and Rookie of the Race was Jimmy Johnson. He didn't do so good. He wound up wrecking the front end of the car and finished seven laps back in 28th. But, you know, it's only his first time. He's not even I think he's barely getting used to these cars. I think he's only had, what, three races this year, four maybe? So he did lead a lap. So he's led a lap in the Indy 500, the Daytona 500, the Coca-Cola 600, the Southern 500, and a few others that are considered premium events. I'm in the Brickyard 400. Of course, he's led a lap in that one. So he's going to stay with the IndyCar circuit for a while. You know, you're going from a wide car with narrow tires to a narrow car with wide tires. I mean, the things handle. You're going from maybe 180 to 205 mile an hour tops to averaging 240 mile an hour, hitting like 260, 270 down some of them long straightaways. I mean, there's a lot of getting used to. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. Tony Kanaan, former Indy 500 winner, finishing third. Fourth is Connor Daly. Elio Castroneves, another former winner. He was seventh. Simone Pagenaud, eighth. Alex Palou, ninth. And Coming in 10th is Santino Ferrucci. Well, that shifted the points because they had double points. Race finish under caution. Six cautions for 31 laps, which is a pretty clean race. All IndyCar, you kind of have to be delicate. You don't have all that sheet metal around you. 38 lead changes amongst nine drivers. That's a lot of lead changes. And Jimmie Johnson led lap 188 to 189 because everybody else was pitting. But, hey, it's a lap led. As far as the points go, being points get doubled for Indy. Marcus Ericsson takes the points lead over Pato O'Ward. Scott Pelew is third. Will Power fourth. Joseph Newgarden fifth. Scotty Dixon, sixth. McLaughlin, seventh. Simone Pagenaud, eighth. Felix Rosenquist, ninth. And Colton Herta rounds out the top 10 in points. Montoya, Juan Pablo's in there. There's a lady running, Tatiana Calderon. She's even in the fields. Didn't run the Indy 500. Okay. How about... There he is, Juan Pablo. Finished 11th. He's a former winner. Now, I think when he won, he drove for Ganassi. I think now he came back and is driving for... He might be driving for Penske. But he's not even near the top 10, which is kind of hard to believe because some big names are below that, like Graham Rahal, Elio Castroneves, Tony Kanaan, they're below the top 10. Ferrucci, Montoya, Marco Andretti. Either some of the other teams have picked up the engineering, or some established names are just having a bad year. It's hard to believe, though. Anyway. Well, there you have it. The results of the Indy 500. Started kind of early. I think they might have had enough time to make the trip from Indy to Charlotte. They had closed the gap on the starting time. They started the Indy 500 later, so it was difficult to do, but they wound up getting it done. But the next event would be the Chevy Detroit Grand Prix this coming weekend at 3 p.m. And then after that is Road America a week later. Then they're off to July. The Tag Heuer countdown, 5 days, 2 hours, 45 minutes and 50 seconds and counting. I think it's on the U.S. They got it listed as USA Network, but Peacock and Sirius XM. Oh, Tatiana Calderon drives for A.J. Foyt. Marco Andretti. Andretti Herta with Marco and Kerb. It's like dudes. Ed Carpenter of Ed Carpenter Racing. He's been around. Him and one of my former guests, one of the IndyCar regulars, Sarah Fisher. They paired up for a while, and then I guess Sarah left racing altogether. I wonder whatever happened to her. I'll have to see what happened. I used to be able to get a hold of her, but, you know, she had gotten married, and she might have had a kid, of course. Indy 500 purse soars to new heights. Ooh, winner taking $3.1 million from a total purse of $16,200,000. The largest purse in history. That's a nice chunk of change there, Marcus. What are you going to do? That's a, I think that has to be the highest payout. I mean, the Daytona 500 isn't that much. I think that's all structured. Oh, they're all structured, even the... And so we're... Tomorrow, Jeremy Mayfield will be on Dale Jr.'s podcast. Alrighty, let's go to the truck race. And taking the checkered flag, the Watermelon Man, Ross Chastain, driver of the 41, led two times for four laps. He's not going for points in this series, but hey, another trophy's another trophy. Grant Enfinger second. John Hunter Nemechek third. Fourth, Christian Eckes. Zane Smith in fifth. Tanner Gray, good run for Tanner. Sixth, started sixth, finished sixth. Kyle Busch seventh. Chandler Smith eighth. Stuart Fries in ninth. And Ben Rhodes rounds out your top ten. Now I was wondering why I hadn't seen Jennifer Jo Cobb in the field. She's actually got skin cancer. She had a picture of herself with stitches and trussed up, and I guess she's going through some chemo and that stuff. I kind of feel bad for her, but being an owner driver of a small team like that kind of makes it hard. I mean, when you have to park your truck, you have no resources, so that's kind of not a good thing. I don't even see anybody filling in for her. It was the Carolina Education Lottery 200. Five cautions for 25 laps, took an hour, 42 minutes, 17 seconds, average speed, 125.827, margin of victory, 0.102 seconds, a little bit over a tenth of a second, which is, we're talking a fender here. 15 lead changes amongst nine drivers, nobody failed to qualify. Let's check on the points. Who's leading the points now? Points. Jan Hunter Nemechek leads the points. Ben Rhodes second. Zane Smith, he's third. He's got three wins. So when they, if they, they used to reseed them, most wins down to least wins down to no wins, and then points battle from there. They change things around every bit. Chandler Smith in fourth with a win. Stuart Friesen in fifth with a win. And we have Ty Majeski sixth. Seventh is Christian Eckes. Eighth, Carson Hosevar. Ninth, Grant Enfinger. And Matt Crafton rounds out the top 10 points guys. Right behind Crafton is Tanner Gray. He's 25 behind Crafton. That might be a little tough to make up, but you never know. Corey Heim does have a win, and he's in 25th. So technically, he should be in the playoffs. So he used to be up at the top 30, but, or is that just the Cup Series? I don't know. It's been a while. Let's get our winner, see what he had to say. Ross Chastain from Nice Motorsports.
All right, we are now joined by the winning driver, driver of the number 41 Chevrolet for Nice Motorsports, and that is Ross Chastain. Ross, maybe just open us up with some thoughts about tonight's race, especially that last restart.
Yeah, I mean, my thoughts are Carson Hosevar won this race. He dominated. He's so fast. He's such a goofy kid, but he's so good at 19 years old and future star in the sport, probably coming for my job or somebody else's. So it's amazing to me that he's 10 years younger than me and he's doing things that I'm learning from him. So just hats off to him and Phil Gould and that 42 group. The best part about this, though, is that Nice Motorsports probably for the first time ever, I mean, I could probably count two or three other times where we had two real chances to win, two trucks that things go right could win. There was a few times a few years ago where I thought, one of my other teammates could win. So I'm just happy to pick up the smashed watermelon pieces after, Carson couldn't win. I'm happy and so proud to pick it up and run with it and win with Worldwide Express, their first win in NASCAR. They are the shipping company the best shipping company that nobody knows about yet. And you're going to see them spread out throughout the sport. And they're supporting me and other drivers and other teams. And you're going to continue to see them and continue to hear about them.
Thank you, Russ. If you have a question for us, please raise your hand. We'll get your mic. Get your mic, and we'll start over here with Bob.
Bob Pocker, Fox Sports. I have two. The first is this more valuable because you have a good feeling for the rest of the weekend or because you got to kind of race on the resin and see what it would do?
Yeah, race on the track, do a green flag pit stop, run the spray, run the very top, move around, try the bottom, try the bottom on restarts. The new Cup cars are quite a bit different than the trucks, but just making those muscle memory, those movements sharper, it's all just racing helps no matter what, and especially on the same track, I'll race a wheelbarrow.
And you mentioned Carson, and he obviously was a little down on himself. He felt he made a mistake. Priest was pretty down on Hosevar, feeling that maybe he didn't drive with as much respect as he should. I'm just curious kind of how you saw those last few laps, and also – you know, when you're racing in the trucks, what are kind of the expectations? I mean, is there an expectation that guys who are young are going to be making mistakes?
Well, if you want to talk about mistakes, I think it was lap one or lap two. I made a mistake in the turn one, and I drove in way too deep and bounced up into Carson and hit him on, like, the first lap. So if you want to talk about mistakes, I was the first one of the entire field probably to do that. So, yeah, it's there's no way around it, right? Carson, he did. He made a mistake, but that's part of learning. And if I would have given him the shove into turn one on the second to last restart, he would have won the race, and Priest would have never even been close. I messed up. I let him down. So that put him in a really bad spot with Priest tight on his door, and Priest knew what he was doing. And I mean, you know what's going to happen whenever you're when you're racing for the win like this. It's I can't believe John Hunter and the 98, I think, that we all made it on the final lap. So, yeah, mistakes were made by all of us. Priest isn't immune to that, but I understand where Priest is coming from. I'd do the same way if I was in his shoes.
What a read.
Reed Spencer with the NASCAR Wire. Two questions. One, Grant says you owe him one. Could you have won the race without the push on the backstretch?
Absolutely not. Nope. No, that's why I took the top, was the momentum's always going to come to the outside. And that's, yeah, there was, I guess, two Toyotas lined up on the bottom and two Chevys lined up on top. And my brother said it his very first race, like, sweet, sweet Chevy power, like, Chevy's won.
And that leads to the second. Did Carson make a mistake by not taking the top?
There's no way to say that in the moment. Coming to the restart, I was confident that we had everything we needed to go win the race, and I did not get through the gears good enough. I gave him an initial push in the restart zone, and then I was a truck length back, and I did not do a good job from there on. So if I would have stayed attached, Carson Hosevar wins this race. He drives away. I fight for second or third. And happy to do that. So the mistake was the 41 truck not getting through the gears. That's not me being hard on myself. That's not just me sugarcoating anything else. It's the simple fact is if I would have pushed him like I should have, he would have won this race.
Go over here in the back right to Stephen.
Stephen Toronto, CBS Sports. Ross, you heard it. Anyone on the who was on the front stretch in post-race heard it. When your crew guy brought the watermelon out for you to do your watermelon smash, the crowd here went nuts. And it seems like people have really gravitated toward your signature celebration. Given that you've lived your entire life in the agriculture industry and you've been such a huge ambassador for the watermelon industry in particular, what has it been like for you to have the fans embrace your watermelon smash celebration as much as they have?
It means the world. It's everything that I've ever wanted. I was a farmer, and I was going to be like my dad and like my granddad and like the seven generations of Chastains that farmed watermelons before us, and they were farming a lot longer than that. I'm proud that we are a small part of feeding this world, and the fact that I can give back to the industry, to agriculture, that not only has supported my family, but that feeds the world and smash this seminous watermelon on the front stretch is absolutely incredible. To have the first Watermelon Queen here for a win, Georgia Watermelon, this is the kickoff of their season. They've been with me. The Watermelon Associations have been with me for my entire career. My very first race at IRP, we had Chef Poon and we had Watermelon Queens and we were cutting up watermelon. I spent more time at IRP out in the fan zone than I did actually like getting ready for the race. And it's just incredible that something so simple as a watermelon has molded my family into what we are. And we're so proud to be farmers. We're proud to be in agriculture. We're proud to be a very small part of feeding this world. And to have NASCAR fans react the way they do, you know, it's truly everything that I've ever wanted.
Thank you.
We'll go up here to Jordan and check if there's anything in the press box.
Jordan Bianchi, The Athletic. You seem kind of taking like a leadership role at Nice when you come down and do these, you know, spot starts and you're behind the scenes and everything as well. Is that something you enjoy and embrace?
Half the time I'm asking more questions in the comp meetings than anybody else is. I raced at Charlotte for the first time in 2012. Before I ever raced in NASCAR, we showed up one afternoon and they were doing petty ride-alongs. I rode right seat. When we went in the corner, I couldn't even see over the dash. I was probably 14. I don't even think it was really legal to do, but yeah, I won't even go into any more detail. I don't want to get anybody in trouble, but I've been racing here for 10 or 11 years now, and I've hit the wall here about everywhere possible. And if I can just help Dean, Lawless, Chris, or Carson, or anybody that comes and asks me, I'm all ears. I'm still learning, and I hope I never stop learning. The day that I don't wake up and think about how to make a race car go faster, and I don't wonder what I could do better than the next guy, I probably should stop racing. So that's the biggest thing I push all these guys and girls to do that I talk to, and that we are all trying to be better race car drivers. I don't look at it as a leadership. I look at it as racers racing, and we're preparing at the shop to win races, and that's where these races are won. So, at Nice, I'm all Team Al Nice and Nice Motorsports. Y'all have seen that. Y'all heard it. I'd do anything for that guy and Cody Efall.
And then a follow-up. As you become more solidified at the Cup Series, and you know what you're going to be doing and you're having success, do you look at the Truck Series and with Nice as an opportunity to kind of maybe expand a little bit and kind of dip your toe into being involved with the team behind the scenes and kind of having more of a role in saying things?
You think I'll be like these other guys and go on a NASCAR team? You're crazy. There ain't no way. I don't know. I don't get it. The best way to make a small fortune in racing is to start with a big one, and I don't have a big fortune. So I'm going to keep investing in what I know in agriculture, and that's – I will go race, and I will help however I can. I think to answer the question behind the question, right, I'm not going to – it's not going to be Al Nice with Ross Chastain or by any means. So I'll help however I can, and I will I don't think – I know from my past, when I've had to race with a dollar amount attached to the race car that I had it on the line, I could not race as good. And the day that I remember the first race that it truly, if I crashed or I won, it did not matter money-wise for me. And for me, being as cheap as I am, just being honest, that was the difference maker in me being able to go that extra step. And I don't ever... selfishly, I don't want to go back to worrying about dollars and cents on race cars. I want to race, and I don't want to get on the other side of the business table. I just don't think I don't have the bandwidth for that. Honestly, I don't think I'm smart enough to do it. I'm smart enough to drive race cars. I'm smart enough to maybe grow, but definitely eat watermelons, and that's about all that I want to do.
You're right here.
Hey, Ross Trent with FrontStretch.com. A lot of fans who might watch on TV, you know, they may assume, you know, Cup drivers coming down to, like, the Xfinity or Camping World Series may have an easier time out there. Just how challenging is it to race against these guys, even despite being in the top series of the sport?
So challenging. I mean, I ran seventh that whole stage three and couldn't pass the group in front of me. And a really, you know, Cody Efall making a short pit call to pit early. We have our number one pit crew from Trackhouse. So the same guys will pit me on Sunday are pitting me here. Like, awesome pit stop. All the times over the years I've been able to come on and off pit road, I feel like I did a pretty good job. Like, that's the difference maker that I probably have more experience at. But lap time and racecraft, like, these guys were taking my air away. They were getting me on restarts. I was getting put bottom of three, middle of three, top of three, like, they were blowing my doors off. I felt like a rookie, honestly, a lot of times. And then once we jumped them on the pit cycle under green, we were in third. I lost it to John Hunter. Again, I couldn't pass a lap truck. Like, the guy's out here, he's going a lap down, and I'm running third, and I can't pass him. And John Hunter blows by both of us. So there's still a lot for me to clean up, especially if I want to go race competitively on Sunday. So learn from this. The cars and trucks drive a lot different, but I don't feel like I had enough upper hand other than the fact that I've been doing it for 11 years now. That's you just can't buy experience, and that's why I race as much as I can. I'm selfish, and I want to be better.
Well, you have Ross Chastain, your Truck Series winner. I had him on the show a long time ago. He's been racing 11 years, and he was driving for Brad Keselowski in the Truck Series when he was on this show. So, hey, he's got some stuff going on, you know. What are you going to do? It's all about improving oneself. All right. off to the Xfinity Series, taking home the checkered flag in the number 8 Harrison USA Chevrolet. Josh Burry led 5 times for 89 laps out of the 200 runs, so that's almost half the race. Ty Gibbs, who started 36th, wound up 2nd. Burry did win stage 1. Gibbs, who actually didn't lead any laps, that's moving up 34 spots is pretty darn good for a 300-mile race. Sam Mayer started on the pole, finished 3rd. Led once for 2 laps. Noah Gragson was 4th. Led twice for 36 laps. No stage wins. Ryan Preece was 5th. Daniel Hemric, 6th. 7th, Justin Allgaier. He didn't lead any laps, but that's kind of weird considering... Oh, wait, led 3 times for 63 laps. Sorry about that. He did win stage 2, so there's your stage winners. Sheldon Creed, 8th. Trevor Bayhn, former guest of this show, 9th. And rounding out the top 10, Myatt Snyder. Race was 2 hours, 33 minutes, 7 seconds. Average speed, 117.557 miles per hour. Margin of victory, 18.039 seconds. That's a gap and a half. It's Burry's 4th career Xfinity Series win. 8 cautions for 44 laps, 12 lead changes amongst 5 drivers. Next race for Xfinity, Portland International. Let's check the points. Here's your points lead as they break down. A.J. Allmendinger still leads the points with a win. Noah Gragson, 2nd, 2 wins. Ty Gibbs, 3rd, 3 wins. Then you have Justin Allgaier, 4th, has a win. Josh Burry with the win Saturday now has 2 wins in 5th. Sam Mayer, 6th, no wins. And then you have Brandon Jones in 7th, Austin Hill in 8th, 1 win apiece. 9th, Riley Herbst. 10th, Daniel Hemric. 11th, Landon Castle. Landon didn't have a good a day the Saturday. Ryan Sieg in 12th. 12 make the playoffs. No wins from 9th on down. Scroll down lower, see if we have any... No top 30 or bottom 15 guys with any points. So like I know trucks have one, I think, and the Cup Series has one that's down low. All righty. Let's hear from our winner, Josh Burry.
All right. We've now been joined by our race winner from today's Alskoll Uniforms 300 in the NASCAR Xfinity Series, Josh Burry, who's the driver of the number 8 Harrison's Chevrolet. Congratulations, Josh, on that win. I know it probably feels nice to pull into victory lane at Charlotte Motor Speedway, which is the first time that a JRM car has won at Charlotte, so congratulations on that little record as well. If you don't mind, give us a few quick nuggets from your vantage point of those last few laps before we open up for questions.
Yeah, no, obviously Junior Motorsports, we've been on an amazing run the last month or so, really last 6 months, and I felt like we had the best practice we've had all year yesterday. I thought we had a really good car. I felt really good about going today, and but I'm not sure that I knew I could rip the fence for at Charlotte for 200 laps without hitting it. So, man, that was phenomenal. The battle with Justin was so intense. It just seems like me and him just find each other and race each other. And I knew the green flag cycle would be really important. I tried to maximize as much as I could getting in there. I probably left a little bit out there, and that kind of worked against us. But, I've never done a green flag pit stop here. So, all in all, amazing day. Really excited for Harrison's USA. They're regionally based. They have 6 stores here in the Carolinas, and I know they're excited to get to Victory Lane.
All right. We're going to now go to questions, and we'll start with a question from Matt and then come up front.
Matt Weaver, Racing America. What's up, Josh? The hard racing with Justin, I believe he came over to Victory Lane to congratulate you too. What is the racing like with him, and then what did he tell you in Victory Lane?
He just said good job and acknowledged all our guys. It's tough, right? Like, the reality of it is like, our cars are phenomenal right now, and there's 5 of us in the top 5, 7, 8, whatever it is. We're going to have to race each other. And more times than not, Justin and I seem to find each other racing for these wins, and, it was intense. But, I respect Justin. He's a very underrated race car driver. He's very good. And right now, the reality of it is that we're pushing each other to get better every week. And that was a tough battle for sure. But, it come down to it that who was going to slip, and luckily I didn't.
A lot of years of running races down the road at Concord, winning the first race for JRM here, winning a race at Charlotte Motor Speedway, how rewarding is it to make that transition from being Concord short track winner to Concord big track winner?
Yeah, no, it's amazing. You know me better than anybody, right? Like, I've been running up and down the East Coast, the Carolinas, Virginia, racing late models, and I accomplished a lot of amazing things, but the reality of it is I never knew I could do things like this. And I'm so thankful for the opportunity that I've received with Junior Motorsports to get here. They continue to believe in me for years, and we grinded away on the short tracks and just never let up. Just always tried to get better. And, I'm learning more about myself now in the last few years than I ever have. And I'm so thankful to be here and to win at Charlotte's really special. We have a lot of, obviously, like I said, Harrison's USA and a lot of guests from our sponsors, family members, employees at Junior Motorsports that don't get to come every race. It's special. Like you said, it's always a special race around here.
All right, Steve, go ahead.
JR Motorsports won 63 Xfinity races. The first one at Charlotte. Is that hard to believe for you? And what does that feel like to finally get that monkey off the back?
Yeah, no. I'll be honest. I've been an employee at Junior Motorsports since 2010, and I've seen him struggle a lot at Charlotte. So I think we all knew this was going to be a great benchmark for where we were at as a company. And I think I'll speak for everybody there that I think it exceeded our expectations. All of our cars were really good, especially Justin and I. Noah had some trouble early on. I'm not really sure what happened to him. But at the end of the day, we're putting 4 cars, sometimes 5, up front every week. And the reality of it is that the odds are higher for contact and good racing, but they're also a lot higher for wins and stage wins, and that's what we're trying to do.
All right. We're going to continue with questions. We'll go in the back. Steven, go ahead and get a microphone. Okay, here it comes.
Hey, Trent here with FrontStretch.com. Racing your teammate like that, it's a different type of racing. What's it like under the helmet for a driver when you do that? Is there any smiles being cracked? Is it more fun than usual? And to follow up with that, back at the shop, what's the camaraderie like there between the JR teams and the drivers?
Well, it's hard. It's hard racing your teammates. There ain't no way around it. At the end of the day, we're all in the same car. We all work with our teams each and every week to just try to be a little bit better than the other 3. And you're going to have those moments like you did today where we're just going at it. But the reality of it is I respect the hell out of Justin, and he's helped me a lot. And racing like this hard, is only making all of us better. But at the end of the day, like I said, it's tough to race like that. Because the reality of it is you want to win for your team, but you're representing a lot of people back in Mooresville that would love to see a 1-2, not both of us spun out in the wall. So it's a tough balance. I'm learning more about it every week. But, you know, I'm just thankful to be here. I'm thankful to have fast cars right now. And we're just going to try to keep the throttle down.
All right. We're going to go to Steven and then up front. Go ahead.
Steven Toronto, CBS Sports. Josh, you talked about being at JRM for a long time, and you've also driven multiple cars within this organization. And in years past, it always felt like one or two of JRM's cars would be ahead of where the other two were. Say the 1 or the 8 would be behind the 9 and the 7 a little bit, or vice versa. Now this season, all 4 have been extremely competitive and fixtures in the top 5. What do you think that the difference has been this year to allow every car in the organization to be performing at the same high level that they have?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of reasons. I mean, obviously, the race cars are super fast, and I mean, everybody at the shop's been working really hard. We get a lot of support from Hendrick Motorsports. You know, I don't know behind the scenes what, if anything's really changed from last year. I'm not really sure there has, but at the end of the day, I really honestly believe that all 4 of our teams are working together pretty well. It might not look like it, but, and I think having 4 consistent drivers in the car every week is helping. And I think that Sam and I are helping, you know, push Justin and Noah to get better, and they're pushing us to get better. And that's what I said. I mean, it's healthy competition when you can run like that. It's tough on days like this. It's tough when things happen to each other. But at the end of the day, we're pushing each other to be better. And if I don't win, I want one of them to win. And, you know, it's across the board, Noah and Justin and Sam as well. Sam's been, you know, knocking on the door, right? He's going to win. And after he wins, he's probably going to be off to the races after that. So we're just going to keep just trying to work and keep our head down and get better every week.
There you have your winner, Josh Berry. Okay, on to the main event. Sunday night, 6 o'clock start time. The Coca-Cola 600. It took a while, but it was coming down to the Gibbs guys. Because a lot of the other leaders wound up getting wrecked because Austin Dillon decided to make it 3 wide and take out the front 2. Cole Custer, Joey Logano was involved in that. Ross Chastain, a whole bunch of people. He was trying to make it 3 wide, going for the lead, but, you know, doesn't always work out that way. Anyway, when all was said and done, Denny Hamlin took the checkered flag, you figure, and he was the one crying about the Ryan Blaney winning the, and that's what got taken on that wreck too, was Ryan Blaney, about the finishing of the All-Star race. But I guess a week's experience didn't hurt because then he started from the pole and wound up finishing first. Coming at him but wasn't able to make the pass, wound up second, was Kyle Busch. Harvick was third. Chase Briscoe was fourth. Christopher Bell fifth. Tyler Reddick, sixth. Ricky Stenhouse Jr., seventh. Michael McDowell, eighth. Ninth, Kyle Larson. Larson was doing pretty good. I mean, he had hit the wall twice, had pit road penalties, and had to start from the back. He did lead up until, like, the final few laps. He chose not to take tires and I think it cost him in the end because the fresher tires were able to get around him. But sometimes you take a gamble, it works. Sometimes you don't. But he wound up ninth, and then Alex Bowman wound up 10th. Of course, the guy that used to drive the 48 was in the Indy 500, driving the number 48. The race took 5 hours, 13 minutes, and 8 seconds. One of the longest ones around. Average speed, 118 miles an hour. Margin of victory, 0.119 seconds. Your stage winners were Daniel Suarez, won stage two. And further back, Chase Elliott in 33rd, won stage one. So that just goes to show you what kind of crap was going on. It was a 48th Cup victory for Hamlin. There were 18 cautions for 90 laps, including three stages. That's right. Actually, four. Why did you show in stage one and stage two? There was actually four stages. Come on, NASCAR, get your sheet together, your stat sheet, that is. 31 lead changes amongst drivers. Let's check the points. After all that, there might have been some shuffling. Chase Elliott still leads the points. Ross Chastain in second place. Chase has a win. Elliott has a win. Chastain has two. Kyle Busch in third with three. Ryan Blaney in fourth with none. Points, race wins. The all-star race doesn't count. Martin Truex Jr., no wins. He's in fifth. He had a shot Tuesday. I'm getting confused with all the days. Sunday night as well. Joey Logano has a win in sixth. William Byron, seventh. Eighth, Alex Bowman. Ninth, Kyle Larson. They all have wins. Tenth, Christopher Bell. No wins there. 11th, Harvick. Tyler Reddick in 12th. Chase Briscoe, 13th with a win. Eric Amarola in 14th, no wins. Austin Dillon, 15th, no wins. And then Eric Jones in 16th with no wins. But Denny Hamlin has two wins. He's 17th, so he moves up due to the fact that he locked in. And then below him is Austin Cindric in 19th and Kurt Busch in 20th. Both of them have wins, so move them all up. And Amarola, Dillon, and Jones are left out. So that would actually put Ryan Blaney is the first one with no wins that would be in the playoffs. All righty, let's see if we can get some audio. We have Denny Hamlin, Sam McCauley, and Coach Joe Gibbs.
No. In the middle. That feels like a good place. Right, or right there. There you go. All right. Good evening. Good morning. Not sure which one it is officially, but we are going to start here with our post-race media availabilities this evening from the Coca-Cola 600 here at Charlotte Motor Speedway with our race winning team, which is the 11 team from Joe Gibbs Racing. We've now been joined by the crew chief, Sam McCauley, and we'll get a couple of thoughts from Sam on this victory, and then we will go to media for questions. So, Sam, before we do that, congratulations on this win tonight. I know that you we're in a little bit of a unique situation. The whole team was coming into this weekend. I know Denny spoke about that yesterday after the pole win. But just talk a little bit about how this team has rallied, won the pole yesterday, won the Coke 600 today, and just kind of what all that feels like here in this moment.
Cool. Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes.
You know, so having, you know, it's kind of a, it was a tough deal, you know, being, getting two of our guys on the pit crew suspended and Gabe Hart. But, you know, we really did a lot of pit practice this week, you know, JGR pit department worked a lot with Mike and Nate, our two fill-ins on the pit crew, and they did a great job all night. You know, that so on that side of it, you know, a lot of hours put in, a lot of reps for them in their new positions with Nate and Jack and Mike on the right front, left rear. And, you know, so then on the car side, you know, having I think the main focus was just, you know, we really need to – we just need to bring the best car we can, you know, like we always do. But I'd say getting the pole, you know, that was definitely a something we were really working on. And I think that that was major tonight because, you know, having the new guys on the pit crew, we needed – having that built-in advantage of stall one was very beneficial for us. Just you know, mindset – of knowing we have an advantage here. We just need to, you know, be solid, maintain. And then ultimately I think that was, you know, really, that was part of the key of ensuring we were first car on four tires on that last stop.
What was that? If you were good, you could make up positions. If you weren't.
Wanted to win this race and just tell us a little bit of what it feels like to actually be able to bring home that trophy tonight.
Yeah.
And there's Benny.
Feels great, obviously. You know, it wasn't looking good for about 398 laps, and considering our day, I was going to be pretty content with a fourth place finish. And you know, I just knew with that number one pit stall, we had an opportunity if everyone pitted that we could come out first, and we didn't. But we were the first car on four tires, and yeah, it just it worked out. Things worked out for us. They haven't worked out very well for the first 12 races in a lot of different ways, but certainly this one was one that we capitalized on the opportunity. You know, we managed the race. We knew we didn't have the fastest car, the best car by any means, but we just stayed in the race, didn't make any mistakes, and gave ourselves an opportunity when the opportunity arises for us.
All right. We're going to open for questions. If you have one, raise your hand, and we're going to try to get to as many questions as we can. We'll start up here with Trenton and then go back to Don.
Hey, Danny. Trent with FrontStretch.com. Congrats on your first Coke 600. Tonight was, I mean, Katy Perry made a song about it. You have your highs and lows. You're up and you're down. You're hot and you're cold. Take us through your night, starting from the pole, winning this race. And then you said on Junior's podcast you'd walk away, you know, you'd want to walk away from the sport as a winner. Is this the type of race you'd want to walk away from as a winner?
Well, it's, you know, I'm not near the end of my career by any means, but this certainly is one that will be on the resume, you know, when you're done and, you know, you're looking at all your accolades. The Coke 600 is way up there, and I've had 17 tries at it and hadn't won it until today. So it's just it means a lot. And you know, we started on the pole and I thought that we were just going to stay up front most of the day, but we just weren't very good. To be honest, we battled with the car. We were tight, we were loose, but overall just didn't have the grip that we needed. And yeah, it was a struggle most of the day, but we just stayed in it and never really got ourselves outside the top 10, really outside the top 8. We just kind of stayed in that spot. And you know, we capitalized and made our car better in the final stage. I was able to charge up to fourth, and I thought that was about all the potential that we had in the car. But when the caution came out, it was like, here we go. We got an opportunity to win, and finally something, you know, kind of went our way.
All right, Don, go ahead.
Don Jeffrey, CSBN Media. Danny, just talk congratulations, first of all. But just talk about maybe is this the rebound the sport needed after last weekend, all the controversy and, you know, just people disappointed in the overall racing product that the All-Star Race delivered. And then tonight with all the carnage, the passing, just talk about the, you know, the sport as a whole. Was this the, you know, shot in the arm that we needed after last week?
Yeah, I mean, certainly had some good moments today and in the end as well. Anytime you have a green white checkered, you're going to have some pretty exciting moments, and everyone's going to drive really hard because this is a marquee event. And so I knew that sparks were probably going to fly on the first green white checkered, especially with guys with a little bit older tires. And then you had guys with four tires like myself. And so, yeah, it's good to have a race that, you know, was competitive. I thought that, I don't know how many changes or You know, guys led laps, but it seemed like a pretty competitive race for the most part. The groove kind of moved around a little bit. At the end, it kind of got a little bit top lane dominant, but it's just part of it. And it's we haven't been able to run the wall at this track for many, many years. So I think a lot of that had to do with them not spraying more than one coat of resin on the track. That was a big factor. And yeah, it was a good day. I mean, I got to go back and watch the race to see what kind of racing, but I'm sure we're going to dissect it and always continue to improve.
And there you have Denny Hamlin. All right. This coming weekend, everybody's going to be all three series in action, but the Cup Series will be in Illinois for the Worldwide at the Worldwide Technology Raceway. It used to be Gateway, I think, for the Illinois 300. And the Camping World Truck Series will be there as well for the Toyota 200 on Saturday. And after that on Saturday on FS1, you're going to have a doubleheader. The Pacific Office Automation 147 at Portland International Raceway at 4:30. So you have Saturday 1:30 for the trucks, 4:30 for the Xfinity, and Sunday back on Fox Sports 1, 3:30, the Cup Series. Well, anyway, that's our show for today. Hope you all enjoyed it. We'll see you all next week. I'm Vinny B. Good day and good racing. Bye now.